I'll try to tell you, not only the type of slide that we're seeing or the kind of art that we're seeing, but also I'll always tell you the century as well as if I know exactly the place it's located in the world where it's located to. And the first ones we're going to be seeing are all going to be from the catacombs in Rome. And I expect some of you have been there. How many have seen the catacombs? Oh, wonderful. Because I've been to Italy several times, and I've never been to the catacombs, but we're talking about going there in November, and that's going to be one of the things on our list. Well, what we're seeing here, and I have two right in the beginning that just show the interior of the catacombs, but please, you people that have been there, tell me your reaction to it, and how did you, is it like what you're seeing here, and how did you feel when you were in there, and so forth?
There's definitely a flashbulb in that picture.
Yes, I...
And it's crowded because you're with a group.
Oh,
it's not empty like this, it's crowded.
Uh-huh. So you went on a tour, of course.
Well, we were a group.
Uh-huh. And how about some of the others? Was it damp? Because it, you know, this is the impression I would have if you're going to be underground here with all this stone and so forth. It would be very damp. And how many were you able to see the frescoes that were still on the walls pretty well?
Yeah.
Somewhat.
Difficult.
Yeah.
This picture gives a feeling of spaciousness, and what I recall the feeling was of narrowness.
Yeah, this is what other
darkness.
People. Very close.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and this is. Looks like it's, you know, one of these huge Carlsbad cavern caves.
Yeah.
But it's just not like that at all.
What's it about 10 feet across?
If that. Well, I think it's remarkable that they're still letting, you know, our tours and so forth go in here because so many of our really early art, you know, we are no longer allowing the tours to go through it. So. The next one I'm showing, I wanted primarily to show you the kind of architecture that they're using because we can see here very definitely the Grecian Roman type of architecture with the columns. And you'll see in the back here, I'm going to show you a close up of this fresco, I think also this one and this one. But now I understand, and maybe some of you have had a little more background in this than I have on what was all taking place in the catacombs, but besides being the burial places, it was also, they had, you know, some sermons, and they did have a lot of candle lighting and incense burning. So I think it's remarkable that we still have frescoes in as good a condition as we do today with that kind of atmospheric, you know, disturbance that you would have. But I primarily put this one in because I wanted you to see the very definite type of, going back to our Grecian times, the kinds of columns that they had around the crypt. Also this, of course, would be Grecian, because as we begin to look at our first images of Jesus, we're going to be seeing many of the types of illustrations that were used with our Grecian and Roman illustrations. And this is the first one, which, as we can tell, it's a mural of Jesus or Christ as the Good Shepherd. And this is an example of a fresco that was done in about 250. So this would be our middle third century. And I want you to notice little animals. I think they're really quite whimsical and fun. When we study about the first images of Christ, we find out that they were using images that had been used oftentimes by other pagan deities. For instance, the Good Shepherd was a deity in the Grecian times. And he was, at that time, a deity for philanthropy. So it was just kind of carried over. And we haven't seen Jesus. Now, you and I don't see pictures of Jesus like this. But I work at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, And there we have a very old fresco that came from a wealthy Roman home in the kitchen area. And they have a deity that's dressed in very, very similar clothes to this one. And it was the deity that would always be providing food. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's, you know, it's really interesting how we first began to picture Jesus. Another example of the Good Shepherd, we're going to find that most of our early pictures of Christ are going to be either he's the Good Shepherd, and that I've already, you know, discussed with you as going back to a deity from the Grecian Roman times. He will sometimes be pictured as the teacher to the apostles, and very often performing miracles. So those are the three ways we're usually going to see him. And it isn't until about the 10th or 11th century that you begin to see the crucifixion. And then, of course, you see it a lot. But that says something about the what was going on in the history of that time. You know, the plagues were taking place and the Dark Ages. But I want you to notice here a little bit of landscape we have in the background. Two little trees and our sheep in the foreground and birds. Down here we see, I believe this is a peacock. I'm going to be showing you a peacock a little later. A peacock is very, very often used in Christian art. Now, maybe I should tell you a little bit about how frescoes are done, because I think it's really remarkable that we even have these images today. A fresco isn't just painted on a dry surface. It is wet plaster, and the pigment is applied to the wet plaster. So you see, it's really embedded right into the plaster. If this was just painted, we wouldn't have it today. I showed a few of these a while back, and one of the young men in the group said, "Are these an artist's rendition of what you think they look like?" And no, you know, these are really everything I'm showing you is authentic. What we see here is orifice. And again, this goes back to a pagan legend. And orifice was, he was a poet and a musician that could charm animals back in Grecian times. And we see him with his musical instrument and all the different kinds of animals. And what I want you to notice here is the kind of landscaping, because we really do have a sense of perspective, and we're going to lose that. We're going to lose it for many hundreds of years. It's not going to come back until I get done showing my slides in around the 15th century. But the artists didn't look to nature in those days. They didn't look at how people were built or how animals were built. Rather, they looked at other artwork. And so they studied what other artists did. And it wasn't until many hundreds of years later that they really began to have an understanding of perspective. And of course, we know our Greeks, you know, when you study about the Greek society, they had wonderful art, and they had a good understanding, but it's kind of lost for a long time. But look at this fellow here. Graceful horns. So I would imagine that Orpheus there is really charming the animals with his music. This again goes back to the pagan times. This is Orient. And this is a very common way that the early Christians used for prayer. We usually think of folding the hands, but holding your hands outspread like this was a very common way of praising the Lord. And they also used this as an indication of the soul that's gone up. I think the next illustration also shows, yes, there's that Orient position again, and this time with some shepherds and we see, again, quite a bit of landscape in the background and the animals and our Grecian urns here and vases. Now, I think I've got the size of this one. Yes, somebody asked about the sizes of these. This is 27 inches deep here at the point where the center figure is. And then it's 79 inches across. And notice that there's also fresco all along here. So there'd be fresco all around here. You know, it's a little bit a different than a Western idea where we would frame a picture. I mean, it was pretty much all painted with designs.
It would almost be that size.
Well, 27 by 70, yeah, just about this size right here, over a crypt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just a couple of things about art. I think it's kind of interesting how the artist, and of course these are not very well-trained artists that are doing this, have put the figure so it fits into this lunette form. You know, it's kind of bending down, you know, playing with this little animal. And then the central figure that we really want to have our attention drawn to has really got a focal point. And the little animals here are just, you know, they're laying down. They couldn't stand up there and be in that little corner. Now, I put this mosaic in, and we aren't going to see mosaics again for about another 5 or 6 or 7 slides, but this one is a very early Christian mosaic, and it was done in the 3rd century. This is located in Rome in a mausoleum. All of the slides that you've seen so far that are in the catacombs are in Rome. So I want to, and please, if I begin to talk away and don't tell you where the location is, raise your hand and ask me, and I think I know the location of most of these. We have beautiful, beautiful mosaics that go back hundreds of years before this. Almost all of our major museums around the world have wonderful pieces of mosaic that come from Grecian and Roman times. So they knew the technique of mosaic here. But the reason I want to show this to you is it's because this is the time that the Roman Emperor has now accepted Christianity. So Rome, as far as the government is concerned, is a Christian nation. And we can see that this is Christ because of the halo and because of the cross and the symbolism in the background. But what they're picturing here is Apollo. Mm. Apollo and the horses. Mm. And so we see this blend, you know, not giving up these pagan beliefs as we're getting into trying to depict the Christian symbolisms. And this is 3rd century. This is located in Rome.
Excuse me. Was there any sort of prohibition in terms of taking Christ and depicting him at that point in time for those people so that it was easier for them to slide it into the deities that they had depicted for years, sort of that
sure.
mystique of...
Well, it's just, you know, and of course, we use their churches, right? I mean, they took the temples that had been used for pagan mm-hmm. temples, and they made Christian basilicas and Christian cathedrals out of it.
But was there any prohibition against depicting Christ, that kind of prohibition that you sometimes you see later, or that you shouldn't be, just like you shouldn't have said the word for God and you use Yahweh instead,
yes.
the same way you wouldn't depict God or Christ?
Yeah, very, very likely. We maybe have some scholars in here that know. I'm an art historian, not a real biblical scholar. So, but I to me, this one's really interesting. And all through when you study Grecian art, you get a lot of grapes. You know, the wine was the major beverage, and here we see the grape leaves. You know, Apollo was not only the god of the god of the sun, or the deity of the sun, but it was the most ideal masculine form. That was the most beautiful masculine body.
Now, you're not making a distinction between the Greeks and the Romans. They're artwork at this point in time, are you?
Well, I'm saying pretty much Grecian Roman because, of course, the Romans adopted almost everything they could from the Greeks. The Greeks had, you know, a very wonderful, wonderful art. And when the Romans got the power, they employed the Greek artists to beautify their cities, to beautify their homes, and they ransacked a lot from Greece, brought it, you know, to bring it right into Italy and to the parts that of the countries that they were then in power of. But the major difference between the Greek and the Roman art is that the Romans were more natural, the Greeks were more ideal.
I'm just wondering at what it would, when the Greek Orthodox Church split off, is there a noticeable difference in the art separating also?
Yeah, and that do you know what year that happened?
Around 54.
Because I've got some Greek Orthodox, you know, the Byzantine, the icons actually begin before that time, I think, don't they? Yeah, they go way back to the 6th century, but I will see that. So we're back in the catacombs now. What I wanted to show you was, I'm following along with the centuries. What we're seeing here, of course, is the Eucharist meal. And this again is 3rd century, a little later than the last ones we saw. Another mural. This is the end of the 3rd century, and now we're seeing the image of the Madonna and the Christ child. See, up till this time we just saw Christ as the Good Shepherd or as a teacher, and now we're going to see quite a few of the Christ child. So this is the first image I have of the Madonna and the Christ child, and this is a prophet. And this is in Rome, in a catacomb. A little later in the 3rd century, Christ raising Lazarus. And we're going to see a lot of miracles now. But this is a favorite. This legend of raising of Lazarus, we're going to be seeing used again and again and again right up till the end of the 19th century. So he's dressed a little differently now, and notice the drapery pattern. Have a feeling of cloth. Lazarus is just looks almost like a fish, and it's wrapped up in this burial linens. Well, here's another one of Lazarus. He was very popular. Here, Christ has got quite a crowd with him going to the tomb. But again, we can see how this is done, you know, over a crypt area within the catacomb, and there would be other mosaic or other fresco along here. It would be completely filled in with painting. And I think this is a fun one. This is the catacomb of St. Peter. And this is where Jonah is being thrown out of the boat to the whale. And of course people, the artist obviously had never seen a whale. And I've got some more whale pictures to show you. They like this story. And they have the interesting sea monsters. But we can recognize the ship when you think about your history, about Roman times, you know, that ship is the kind of a little boat they would have had, a boat, but. And here he's being spit back out.
Oh, wow.
According to the story, of course, he's spit out to the beach. Mm-hmm. and then Christ with, as a teacher, with his apostles. Okay, now we're going to look at a few mosaics, and we're starting in the mid-4th century. And I think, as I said, most of you have probably seen mosaics. They had this technique down really, really well. This particular one is, again, located on the floor of a cathedral in Rome, and it's a Good Shepherd. Now, the mosaic technique, just briefly, and I have a close-up that will show this to you, but they're tiny, tiny little pieces of either colored glass, usually colored glass. And of course, they had glass going back many hundreds and hundreds of years before this, so that was, they had that technique down. And sometimes they also used tiny pieces of stone, but it was usually colored glass. And you can see the beautiful shape effect that they can get. They really have a feeling of depth. You have a feeling that's real piece of, you know, a real piece of fabric here. Again, dressed differently than we usually visualize Christ as being dressed. I mentioned to you that we do see the peacock a lot. The peacock is a symbol of immortality because there is a legend that the flesh of a peacock will never decay. And so it's very often seen on Christmas cards, you know, like Fra Angelico that has that activity scene. That is a very, very favorite Christmas card. I think that I'll show to you next time we look at images. But the peacock is used very often. This is a close-up, so you can just see the beautiful coloring that they've been able to use for these little flowers and the leaves and so forth. The little beaks on the birds. I think it's just remarkable. Oh, here we're back to Jonah again. here we can see him being spit out by the whale. And but aren't all these sea monsters and sea creatures kind of fun and interesting? Octopus and so forth. And when we read the Jonah story, remember that then he ends up sitting under this bush, and this bush comes up overnight, a very large bush comes up overnight. And so it's kind of like a comic strip, you know, we go from one series to another, all in the same one, where he is lamenting there with apparently the bush that Jesus had, or that God had grown into a large bush just overnight.
When is this?
Yes. I believe this is about the 5th century. Just let me catch this. This is the end of the 4th century. Mm-hmm. And it's a floor of a basilica in Rome. Okay, this is the 5th century. So now we're seeing, you know, a very definite change in the appearance of Christ. And again, here he is with his apostles, and we see over the cross, or over the area in the back, this is a cathedral, and it's located in, I don't have the location of this, but the apostles are featured with their wings, and the we see here the ox, and so of course that would be Luke, and then I think the other one here would be Mark the lion. We don't see the ones on the side, but we have a real feeling of perspective here on a flat surface.
Is that some of the earliest presentation in the front of the church and the apse of the church?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if it could possibly be Constantinople. You know, I don't have that record of where that slide is taken. But we're going to be seeing others from the Byzantine area very soon. And here we have the miracle of the loaves and the fishes. And this is 6th century. Notice the little sandals. And again, the shrubbery and the shading of the grass. And of course, the halo. And this is a mosaic that appeared over a clerestory window in a cathedral. And this is 6th century. And the Last Supper here is shown with the fish. And that is oftentimes in the earlier ones, you would have fish as well as the bread. And this mosaic, which does a really wonderful job of showing the four evangelists, Matthew is a winged man carrying his book, and then Mark is the winged lion, mm-hmm. and Luke the winged ox, and John the eagle. And they're all carrying their gospels.
Where was that?
This is Ravenna mm-hmm. in Italy. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. The 6th century. So we can still see this today, you know, if we want to. Then I wanted to put this in because this is the beginning of the icons. And we're going to be seeing this kind of an image of the Madonna and the Child a lot when we get up to the 12th, 13th, and 14th centuries. This is located in St. Catherine's Monastery, and I'm not just sure. Does anyone know, is that Italy?
Well, there's one in the Sinai. Right. The old St. Catherine's is in the Sinai.
So this is the late 6th century.
Yeah.
Have you been there?
No.
Uh-huh.
Here?
Yes?
There's one in Jerusalem also.
Mm. A St. Catherine's Monastery in Jerusalem too.
But it's a newer church.
Now, I didn't realize until I was, well, when I came, of course, I didn't know what slides I was going to use, and I just brought a whole lot of slides from the museum where I worked with me. And then as I began to put these together, there were a few that I wasn't able to identify. And of course, when I get back, I can. But I think it's interesting to see how they're depicting Mary and Jesus here, because he's kind of a little man of wisdom. Right? I mean, he's kind of... And she's very Mediterranean looking. And when we get done this evening, we're going to be in Northern Europe and we're going to see blonde Madonnas. So this is... And here we have Christ dividing the goats from the sheep. Remember that story? And this is also located in Ravenna. Another one from Ravenna, and I wanted to give you a close-up just to show you the technique of the mosaic. And of course, we see here Judas kissing Jesus on the cheek with the betrayal. But you can see these, when you see them from a distance, they look like they're so beautifully shaped, each little piece. And then when you actually get a little closer, it's pretty rough. But, you know, for the artist to be able to be doing this, to know how it's going to, you know, the end results.
Yeah.
And the coloration. Mm-hmm. And Jesus foretells the betrayal of Peter, again at Ravenna. And another one at Ravenna, we have, you know, we have a real feeling of the folding of the fabric. So this is the end of the 6th century. Excuse me, did I hear?
Who's with Jesus?
I don't know. Does anyone? Because, you know, when it was Mary, Lazarus' mother, that brought him, a sister that brought him to the tomb. It was Mary Martha, but we... Oh, obviously that's not Mary Martha. So we're not told that.
Probably John the Beloved.
Probably, yeah. Okay, now we're going to look at a few illuminations of books. And this is the first that I have any record of. And this would be, again, our 6th century. What we're looking at here, you can see at the top, it's Christ in the giving a sermon in the temple, and then the four Gospels below. Now, I'll show you some more illuminations, and then I'll tell you a little bit about how they were done. Our first example of the crucifixion of Christ. So, this is... This is 6th century, and it's Spain.
It's the oldest that they
find. That's the oldest that I have record of. Now, maybe some of you know of, but we're not going to see much of the crucifixion for another. You know, things are pretty. It's pretty difficult now for a few hundred years because we're in the Dark Ages, mm-hmm. and there isn't much art that's preserved, and. Well, I want to point out that these are books we're seeing here. You know, these are illuminations on books. So this is something that is able to travel. Everything that you've seen before this, it doesn't travel. So there isn't much spreading of the art unless you take a pilgrimage or are in that territory. You don't see it. So when you start to have these books that can actually be the kind of art that can travel, because we haven't had art yet that is on boards or on any kind of a you know that can be moved. And so this is an illumination in a book, and we see the Marys here below at the tomb and the crucifixion. And another illumination. I think this is interesting because we can see Christ coming into Jerusalem, and we can see the tree here and the donkey. Look at the ears on that ass or the donkey. Zacharias and the tree.
The headdresses.
Now, I'm showing you here a page from the Kells, which is the Book of Kells. It was done by the Italian or the Irish monks. And this book, you know, you can see the Book of Kells if you go to Dublin, to Trinity College. Have any of you seen it? Yeah, tell us about it. I hear they turn the pages. We were in Dublin just a couple of years ago, and we didn't go there. And I'm really, it's worth taking a trip to go back, I think. Well, I hear they turn the pages really quickly. You can't spend much time on each page.
Yeah that was true. But it looks just like that, because I really didn't get to see much of it.
Yeah, we've seen some of these beautiful first types of manuscripts done at Heidelberg, and it was the same experience. They kind of pushed us through rather quickly, and they turned the pages. And it's interesting because where I work at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, we don't have any of our illuminations on show. Now, if you come and you ask to see some, we will show them to you. They're available to anyone that asks for them. But because they will disintegrate so fast, you know, that we don't have any of them on display. And we have a lot.
How is it then that they're able to, with the Book of Kells, to show?
Well, you know, of course, there's so, it's such a famous thing. People just ask the demand. But,
yeah,
but you know,
what keeps it from disintegrating with such treatment?
Yeah, well, it will. It is going to. Mm-hmm. But it's the light that does a great deal of damage. This is all done on leather, you know. At this time, they were still using vellum. And where I work, I've got a kind of a fun colleague who, one time when we were looking at some of our illuminations in our museum, she figured up how many calves it would take to produce this one book, you know. It's calf skin. And of course, it's gone through a great deal of preparation. And then the monks that were trained in this beautiful manuscript. And when I was reading about these manuscripts in Ireland, I read that the author said it had to be angels that were disguised as monks to do work like that.
What was the year on
this? This is the 7th century or 8th century, let's see. Oh no, 9th century, 9th century. Now this one, this is the first letter, and isn't that beautiful? This is the first letter in the book of Matthew. And now you know from your history that there was, in the 9th and 10th centuries, there was a lot of Viking in infusion coming back down into you know, Ireland and Scotland and those areas. And we see a lot of the Viking type of art here. The twining of these, you know, this twining of this foliage and the, you know, sort of the serpentine twining. But now if you examine this closely, and you maybe can't see it back there, but like here is a little family of people. Can you see those faces? And let's see, here's another face, see? And so this is just one letter. But I have the idea that the monks had some fun doing these things. Because, you know, this is, if you're going to sit there in this little cell and be doing this tedious work, down here they've put a cat playing with some mice. And a mouse has gotten on the cat's back. And you'll see this a lot when you begin to really closely examine. They'll put these little bits of fun and whimsical things in the illuminations. Here's another picture of a human.
How large is that?
It's about this size. It's 5-6 inches.
Is it mosaic?
No, this is painting on leather. It's in a book.
Right.
This is an illumination of a book. You know, our early Gospels were all, many of them were illuminated like this. And I want to stress, now these are things that can travel. So this is how we can spread the story and spread different kinds of art techniques. Because those mosaics and frescoes couldn't spread, you know, we couldn't travel. See, this is how it would look in a book. And the books would be, you know, less than 2 feet. 18 inches or so. I'm sure that some of you have seen some of these ancient books. But when you think that each page is leather, you know, and all this paper, I just think it's just remarkable. Actually, I had thought about doing a whole class here on just illuminations, and I decided, well, we'll just stick it in. There's so much to do.
The figure looks like St. George and the Dragon.
Yeah, it does. Uh-huh. And
is it common to sort of intersperse?
They would intersperse, you know, all kinds of mystical things, and sure. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you know, these little mice and so forth. This is one from Spain. It's again an illumination in a book, and I put it in because it's done by a nun. And it's the first one that I have a record that a woman artist, we even know her name, Nun Enda, Spain in the 10th century. And here she's depicting hell, as you can see. And another one, that was the only one I had by her. Now, we're up to the 11th century, and we're seeing crucifixion, and we're seeing it with some vividness here. We can see the blood really coming, spurting right out of the side of Christ where he was wounded, and Mary and John. This is the 11th century, and this is a in a Greek church visiting.
I'm sorry.
Excuse me.
What does this head mean underneath the cross?
Pardon?
The skull.
The skull?
Yes.
Oh, we'll see the skull quite often, and I'll talk about, tomorrow I was going to talk about symbolism, and I would get into more of the symbolism. But it just means that we as human beings are not going to live forever.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, too, Carol, it's Golgotha, which means the place of the skull, the crucifixion happening at Golgotha?
Well, it could be. I have a book on symbolism, and since we're looking at symbolism tomorrow, I'll look that up. And I'm going to be showing you some tomorrow that do have skulls in it, so I'll check that out before tomorrow. Now, I want you to see how this is, again, now the end of the 11th century, and this is such a good example of Christ with his blessing, Mutra. You know. And this is located in Constantinople at the large basilica there. And then I showed you, and some people were here last week when we had a Vesper service on St. Hildegard, or Hildegard of Bingen, and she lived in the Rhine Valley in the 12th century Germany. And these are some of her illuminations. I'm just going to show you two of hers. What I'm trying to do is to show you what was happening at the time. We move now from the 11th century up to the 12th century. So now what you've seen these other illuminations, and these are the kind. Now Hildegard at this point had not traveled. She had not traveled outside of the Rhine Valley, but she no doubt had an opportunity to see other illuminations that were done in the monasteries, because she was in a large Benedictine monastery when she had her visions. Now this is her vision that she had had, and then after feeling her real call to be putting her visions and putting her writing down, she started to do this. And this is an example of one of her visions. She did 36 of them, and this is the vision of Christ is a loving God, and we are co-creators with Christ. And what we see here, this is a human being, and we don't know if it's female or male, but it very likely could be female. This, see the triune God up here? Okay, now this is the first time we've seen God, right? I mean, I haven't shown you up to this point. We just see Jesus. But this is the triune, you know, the God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit. That the Holy Spirit is the gold up there. And you see the outstretched arms here coming around on each side? See the feet down here. So we're... You know, we as human beings are part of this creation, and he's loving us with outstretched arms. And here Hildegard is working in her little cell in the monastery. I'm just going to show you two of these, because we've had one whole session on her a couple of weeks ago, and then we had the Vesper services last Wednesday. And this is another one of hers. Now, in those days, this would be real gold. This would be, you know, fine powdered gold that would be used in the manuscripts. So it would be very, very vivid. This is a piece that we have in our museum, the enthroned Madonna and the child. It's one of the oldest pieces we have of the medieval period. It is 12th century France, southern France. And if I do a tour on the European masterpieces, we're supposed to begin with this piece. And, you know, I just don't like this piece very well because I don't like either Mary or Jesus here. I mean, she is so stern looking and so stoic. And but I think, she, you know, it says a lot about the culture at that time. Well, for one thing, women weren't very weren't considered very beautiful people in the 12th century medieval period. And the church had a lot of authority, and she's sitting on a throne. Mary is the head of the church, and she has a crown on. We can't see it too well, but she has a crown. And you know, it's a pretty serious authoritarian type of a church that she's representing. And Jesus, again, is quite a little man there. Now we're going to see a real change in how Mary is pictured in the next 200-300 years. And I hope I'll get through that in the next 5 minutes. If we have to stop there, we'll pick up tomorrow night. But I do want to see what is happening with the humanism towards how they're depicting Mary in the next couple of hundred years. This was on the inside. This is on the inside altar of a church. So it's inside. What I'm showing you here is one of our icons that would be a Russian icon. And that is also of the 12th century. And that isn't going to change much for a few. In fact, if you go to France, if you go to Taizé now, you're using these very kinds of images to worship at the church in Taizé. Walt and I were just there less than a month ago.
Is that in the Apples collection or is that?
No, this is a slide that I have. But we have some very similar to this in our collection. But there's, you know, look at this last one. There's not much of a relationship between the mother and the child here. Now we're going to see, even though neither the mother or the child are, well, here the child is looking up to the mother, but the mother is not looking at it. But we're beginning to see this loving relationship and the humanism. And this would be all gold leaf foil that would be put on here. Now, this is about 200 years later. And of course, we've been having now for the 11th or 12th, 13th, 14th century, kind of the cult of Mary. Mm-hmm. And she still has a little crown, but she's real human here. And this would be outside, it would be outside a cathedral. So as the worshipers were entering, this is the first person that's going to greet you. And you'd like to go to a church that has someone like this greeting you, I think. This would all be painted, and it would be in the reds and blues that would be her colors. And you see these little indentations here? There would be bright colored glass here. She's dressed like a lady of the court. So she's dressed just, you know, as the women of that day that had the higher positions would be dressed. And you can't see it. We have this at the museum. And this is life size. And this is a little dove that the Christ child is holding. At about this same time now, we're beginning the building of a large Gothic cathedrals all over France, and some of the, you know, on down into Spain. But France is really where Mary is seen a lot with these kind of figures I just showed you. This was started in the middle 1100s and was finished in about 1330. So it took about almost 250 years to build this cathedral. And I suppose many of you have been there. Yeah. Walt and I were there about a month ago to a Sunday morning service. It was really quite a thrill.
I didn't say the name, Carol. Yeah.
Notre Dame in Paris.
And the statues are these apostles?
Yes, well, I've got some close-ups to show you, I think. Oh, here's Mary again, because she was just outside of all of these cathedrals. Every city had its own cathedral, of course. Here you can see her crown really well, in her beautiful fabric. And I think what she's holding here, I think she's probably holding a lily. I can't see it real closely. I missed that. This is right outside, out of Notre Dame. But I can't remember seeing that because I purchased these slides when I was there. And it's probably holding a lily because that's a sign of purity.
Did you take a picture of the female figure on the opposite side?
No, have you been here? What's on the opposite side?
It's a woman in tatters, depicted blinded.
No,
totally bedraggled, and it represents Judaism.
Oh, you know, we need to go back. We went there on a Sunday morning, and we were along with about, 10,000 other people at the worship service, and then we went back to get the slides the day we left, and it was raining, and so I missed. Well, let's just get through what was happening with the stained glass at that time, and then we'll take off from here tomorrow night. So let's get through the cathedrals, and we'll stop tonight. Walt's telling me I've only got 5 minutes left. Okay, so we can see what was happening with the structures here. That first Madonna that I showed you that I said was so stoic, those Romanesque churches, of course, were, they were really solid. And now we're opening up and we're moving to heaven and we're worshiping. And so we've got these kinds of stories in stone. Every one of these little circles we're seeing here and so forth, they have a story of their own, Annunciation or the betrayal or whatever. And right on the same island as Notre Dame is located is Saint Chapelle. And that was started in the 12th century. And the legend is that this church was built to contain the relics of a part of the cross of Christ along with the thorn of Christ. So, and this is, quite a small, intimate little church. Beautiful, very old, beautiful. And just a few shots of the interior. Some of the most beautiful stained glass in the world. Absolutely beautiful. And then when you begin to examine, every one of these windows has so many, many stories. Here Judas is, with his yellow robe, which is the color of betrayal or jealousy, kissing Christ. In the Annunciation, in Gabriel holding his lily, that's another symbolism of Christ. We'll take off from here tomorrow. I think this is a good place to stop. Yeah, I think that's a good place to end.